Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. Glad you're with us today. As you probably know, if you're a regular listener, one of our goals is really to bring you credible and valid information and insights from diverse members of our community. We want to address how today's choices affect tomorrow's community and how the long-range ramifications, I don't know why I have trouble with those, I type them myself, affect our society and how we work together or sometimes don't work together. As an aside, because I'll try and remember to remind this to you, remind you of this at the end of the program. Also, we are about 5 days from Election Day, and I would suggest that regardless of who you decide to vote for and what you decide to vote about, get your behind out to the polls next Tuesday, or turn in your sample, your absentee ballot if you have one of those, because if you don't vote, in my opinion, you don't get a right to complain later on. We have a topic today we're not going to complain about. We're actually going to talk about something that I think is a very, very critical and positive part of our community. We're going to talk about how the resources of families and homes for foster children really affects our community and what we can do about that. There is currently a shortage of foster parents across the country. And here on the Central Coast, we find really the same challenge is facing us. The statistics I have to work with at the moment are for early 2017. There were 180 children who were separated from their parents and placed in foster care in the first half of 2017. That brought the number of children who were in foster care in San Luis Obispo County for the first half of 2017 to 366 people. Actually, 366 children. Yes, children are people, but we need to remember they are children. They are not in a position to make the decisions for themselves under all circumstances. And if their parents are not making good decisions for them, or they don't have parents to make good decisions for them, foster care is a key part of our community. The goal of the social services departments is to basically keep as many children in the local community and as close to their local community that they were raised in at that point as possible. Because there's a shortage of foster families and placement opportunities, some of these children sometimes get sent to both, for lack of a better word of using it, I wish I could come up with a better word, institutionalized environments out of the county. And that's something that we want to do what we can to make sure it doesn't happen. We want to remind you that this is a program you're welcome to be part of the discussion. The phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 805, which you have to fill out now if you live in 805, 781-3875. My guests today are Linda Belch. She is the division manager for the San Luis Obispo County Department of Social Services. Matt Pinnon, who is the Santa Barbara County Department of Social Services recruiter and trainer for the Our Kids program in Santa Barbara County. And Becca Alexander, who is the Family Care Network Programs Program Supervisor for Resource Families and Adoption Services. And there is so much we can talk about. I don't know how we're going to get to it all in an hour, but I think we probably need to get an understanding first from my guests about what the needs are and why there is not as much not as many families available for services as we have a need for this. So I guess from a county statistical standpoint, because, Matt, you drove the furthest to be here. You're from Santa Barbara County. I'll let you start telling us a little bit about what you really see as a need that – well, my understanding is that there are not enough families for all the children who need this kind of placement. And why is that a difficulty?
Definitely. You are correct. So there's always – you know, whether fortunately or unfortunately, a need for what we call resource homes or resource families. So those are families, community members that step up and say that they would really enjoy and love to, you know, help us support and raise these children that we have taken into our care. And as the process moves through, or as we move through the process with these kiddos, families, well, kiddos sometimes will be reunited with their biological family or birth family, or they will be put into permanency. And for us, permanency is either adoption or it is legal guardianship. And the differentiation between those two is based on their age. And as our families either adopt kiddos or the kiddos go back to their birth families, they sometimes continue on as resource families, or sometimes they, you know, stop being a resource family. So we have that one aspect where families, you know, sometimes continue on, sometimes they don't. And then we have the other aspect of kiddos that are being detained on a continual basis. So we have kind of a waxing and a waning from both ends.
Is at the risk of accusing parents of things that they may not want to be accused of or shouldn't be accused of, are the kind of situations where you are placing children in foster care usually issues of can't think of a better word, unfit parents, or parents who have some kind of criminal justice issues that are making them or creating a situation where the county feels like they are their parents are not capable of keeping the child. How is that decision made, I guess, is the first question that comes up.
Sure. So anytime that a child's coming into foster care, it's because we've identified a safety concern. Bad parenting does not necessarily equal safety concerns. Just because you may feed your child sugary cereal in the morning doesn't mean you're a bad parent. So we're really looking at the safety of the child. And just kind of in general answer, we do know for the children in our county the breakdown of why they come into our care. And for San Luis Obispo County, 70% of our kids are in foster care because of general neglect. So that would be the parents aren't accessing medical care. They aren't able to provide for basic needs like food, and that we haven't been able to resolve that within the family unit, because anytime we become involved, if we receive a report of child abuse or a concern of child abuse, our social worker's first and foremost job is to really see if we can stabilize that family and not take that child into foster care. We don't take kids into foster care unless we really, really know that that's the place they need to be and where that family needs to go in order to provide them the support that they need to heal and to become a cohesive family unit.
Okay. So for clarification in my mind, how long do most children end up in foster care, and is there any way to project how long they're going to be in foster care? And I realize in some cases they're in foster care for the entire time that they're under 18, and sometimes they're in foster care for the entire time that they that's needed until they are able to be adopted by either that family or another family. But I'm, you know, are we talking about the average foster care length is 6 months to say 2 years, or is it usually from whatever age they are until maturity?
So I can share some statistics, again, for San Luis Obispo County, and I'll defer to Matt to talk to Santa Barbara County, because I think that our populations are very similar, so probably our numbers are somewhat similar as far as percentage goes. But as of right now, we have 369 kids in care as of June 30th. Of those kids, 67% have been in foster care less than 2 years. And we do find that about 40% of our kids go home within the first 1 to 2 years. Some of them need a little bit longer to be in our services. About 22% of our kids have been with us for 2 to 5 years, and only 11% have been in care for 5 years or longer. Again, really our focus is to stabilize families, get children home, or if that's not possible, to get them to permanency, as Matt indicated, with adoptions and guardianship.
Okay. I guess, Becca, we know that your organization, Family Care Network, works hand in hand with the county. I have some familiarization with your organization because your founder and president has been on the program before as part of the discussion, and I've been to some of the community awareness events that your organization has put on, and I admire the work that you have. It's always been unclear how that nonprofit situation as a wonderful organization fits into the mix of what it, what is going on with like county social services from a governmental standpoint. I mean, I realize you probably can't legally be doing a placement, but what you do on a daily basis, I think for myself and probably a lot of our listeners is not clear.
Yeah, we at Family Care Network are a community-based organization, so we are a nonprofit. We're a private organization, and we contract with both Santa Barbara County and San Luis Obispo counties. So we don't place our own Family Care Network children. It is the community's children. It's kids that are in the county that are going to come through child welfare services regardless. And so we need to have a good relationship with both counties because we're trying to meet the kids' needs. And what we do as a community-based organization is I feel like we can be a little bit more nimble at creating some programs and having some resources to meet specific needs because the counties have some big overarching responsibilities and they do approve their own families and they're placing the kids in some of their own homes too. And so we have some niche programs that we use to offset some of the other needs in the counties. And we also just have a different way of supporting our parents. It's kind of like a different kind of community. And so there's just a preference too about what organization parents want to go through to be foster parents. And we all want to be on the same page with that. For us, it doesn't matter who you go through as long as you're serving our kids.
So any perception that you're competing organizations is bogus.
Yeah, it's really
your organizations that are working together. Just maybe as a private nonprofit, you have a little more latitude to work with individual families or children on a case by case basis with maybe some of the resources they need that the county may not have the resources or the time for.
And Family Care Network also provides a lot of specialty mental health services for foster youth and other kids in our community. So we can do some things that are a little more seamless, but we still all do the same work.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, man.
Yeah. Kind of to add on to that. So with Family Care Network and working with both counties, one thing that I like to explain to the community and to potential resource parents is that what we call foster family agencies, which is what Family Care Network is sometimes they're able to provide support to our families in a way that we're not able to. So say you have a very proactive couple that wants to be resource parents and they feel that they don't need an additional social worker assisting them and caring for the child, then that family might be a good candidate to go through with the county. But say you have a family that has three other kids and they're interested in taking a child that may have some more needs to be met, then potentially going with Family Care Network could be a really good option because they provide a whole nother level of wraparound services for our kiddos. We all work together because the bottom line is we're doing what's best for these kiddos.
Yeah. The perception, looking through some of the information that I've reviewed and also some of the things you shared with me to prepare for the program, was that there is a perception for a lot of members of the community and maybe potential foster parents that the kids that end up in foster care are, can't think of a better word, are the problem. Okay, that you end up in foster care if you're a child that maybe should be in juvenile hall and you're out of control for your parents, so we're going to find a foster home for you. And that's, from my understanding, the exact flip side of what foster care is about. It's a reflection on the deficiency in the parenting environment in most cases, not a problem with the kid. And I think I don't know how that gets addressed when that's a concern that potential foster parents share with you.
I think you're headed in the right direction with that train of thought. So I think for all of us sitting here, it's not the kids' fault that we have had to step in and become involved in their lives. It is something through no fault of their own. So what we want is we know that when we are detaining a child and placing them with a resource family, we know that that's going to be traumatic. We are trying to decrease the amount of trauma that we're putting these kiddos through. And anything that we can do as a county organization or a nonprofit, that's what we strive to do. When talking about the parents, most of the time, these are behaviors that they've experienced as children on their own. So they're repeating behaviors and the cycle is continuing on itself. So I know we don't look at them as horrible individuals, but we're looking at them as how can we assist you in learning how to be the best parent possible for your kiddos so that we can safely return your kids to you and you can move forward in a happy and healthy way.
I think that's one of the things that's really difficult when we're talking to new foster parents also is answering that question. They may not believe that these children coming into care are bad. I think that they understand these are kids, and all kids have issues sometimes. I'm a parent
all
of teenagers.
Kids, yes,
all
okay.
kids are kids, and foster kids are really no different other than having experienced some trauma. But I think for our foster parents, one of the things that they really look to or struggle with is the parents, is we're interacting with our parents. And that's one of the things that we really ask our resource parents to step up and do, is to be committed to nurturing that relationship between the child in their home and with their family of origin, their biological parents, and to participate and visit and to really make an effort to make sure that that connection isn't lost, because the research really supports that a foster parent and a bio parent who are really engaged with each other, the odds of reunification for that child increase exponentially.
That probably brings us to a tough issue for potential foster parents, and that is if I were considering being a foster parent and It would be difficult for me not to take on that role with that child in my household, and not become very attached to that child. I mean, I love kids. I love what I can do with kids. And my fear might be, gee, this child, for their benefit, may only be with me for a couple of years. But I don't know that I'm prepared to help that child for 2 or 5 years and then discover that they're either adopted out to someone who's prepared to adopt them or hopefully back with their birth family. But that would be a very scary part of this for me. And I don't know how you folks address that fear.
I would like to speak to that if that's okay. This is Becca.
Ahead.
And not only do I think through this in my position, but I've also been a foster parent for a number of years, was a foster parent through private agencies, was a foster parent through Santa Barbara County, now going through San Luis Obispo County to be a foster parent as well because I can't go through my own agency.
That's understandable.
Yeah. And I think what happens when you really start to get in there and love these kids is you realize how much they want to be home with their family members, and learning to step back and understand that I'm one of many mothers that they will probably have. And feeling okay with that. And what we want is the warmest handoff possible to that family of origin, like Linda was saying, so that there's this unbroken, seamless transition back home when possible. And there are those families that are willing to provide permanency. And if that's really where their heart is, then they can also wait for children that are more likely to be adopted. So they don't have to go back and forth and wonder if they're going to be able to keep that child permanently. So there is a place and a fit for everyone that wants to serve foster youth. There's no one way to have to do it. And we can all help assess that and what the family might be good at, so that they know what they're getting into from the beginning. But regardless of if our kids end up going home to birth family permanently or not, most of our kids are going to have contact with their birth families anyway. And that's an important part of who they are. And I remember hearing one kid say, if you're going to love me, you need to love my birth family as well. So it's just accepting the whole package. And just relying on the social workers that are working with you to help you understand how to do that. Mm-hmm. You're never going to do it alone.
Yeah.
Go
ahead, Matt.
I'd like to add, you know, that is – so not only have I been privileged and blessed enough to work for the County of Santa Barbara, but I have been a resource parent for the past 5 years. And we've had 5 kiddos in our home. 2 have successfully gone back to their families. 3 we've actually ended up adopting – And out of those three, one of our kiddos, we actually have a relationship with her birth mother. When we started the process, I was adamant. I did not want anything to do with the birth family. I didn't want to know who they were. I never wanted to talk to them or meet them. Coming through this whole process till now, I'm trying not to get emotional about it, but it's not our place as resource families or foster parents to take that relationship away from our kiddos, because that's where they come from and they deserve that right and that opportunity to know who their parents are, regardless of whether we personally agree with that or not. But now for our daughter, the relationship that we have with her birth mother is absolutely amazing. She is a part of our family and we're a part of her family. And I think what a lot of resource families find out is even though you may have a hole in your heart where you had a kiddo, you were able to be there when their parents weren't, and you were able to show them what unconditional love and support looked like and model that for them so that when they go back to their birth family, hopefully that time that they spent with you is something that they're able to then teach their family about too.
Thank you. That's incredibly good information to work with here. Are there opportunities for the flip side of that? If a child is able to go back with their birth parent because whatever the situation was that wasn't conducive to that 3 years ago, is the foster family, because there may be other kids involved, are there ways for them to have the opportunities to stay connected with that child after the fact? My hunch is that can get kind of really gray and murky pretty easily, because you could have very well-intentioned foster families or foster parents that when they release a child back to its birth parents, then want to decide what good mentor parents they can be for that parent and frankly just get in the way. So I'm wondering, how is that possible and how do you work out those kinds of struggles?
I think there's definitely a way to have an open door policy with a child leaving your home where they know that they can connect with you. Sometimes it's having an understanding about how you're going to stay in contact once that child goes home, and so already having those conversations between the adults ahead of time. And sometimes it's just letting the child know, when you're ready and you want to get in touch with me, this is how you do it. I'd love to hear from you. And just from my own personal experience, I have foster daughters and foster sons now that are all adults, and they've stayed at my house and spent the night. I've taken them on vacations before. I've gone to visit them now that they're married and have their own kids. And so it's incredible to see them for the rest of their lives. So they know that these relationships are vital connections. They don't just end all of a sudden because their placement changes. But I think you're right. There are some like healthy boundaries people need to put in place just to make sure they're not usurping the real parent's role. I use that term real loosely, but the parent's role.
Okay. We have a call. Let me try and grab this here. Hold on a second. Okay. Kevin, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. Kevin from Atascadero, you want to jump in the conversation with us?
Yeah, I had some question here. I was just wondering, I understand there's different agencies out there dealing with the foster care services, but I was a little confused as to how someone would decide which agency to go with.
Very good question. Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. So all children come through the social services department. We are the county welfare department, and so anytime there's an allegation of child abuse, we have social workers who will investigate and make a determination of whether or not whatever the concerns are in the home rise to the level of being a safety concern and that this child needs to come into foster care. Even at that point, we don't have the final say. There's a court process and all kinds of protections in place to make sure that everything's being being handled very appropriately. Once the child is in care with us, then our job as an agency is to really look at who is the best fit to parent this child. And so that's a conversation and an art. We have a placement team who is phenomenal, who know our foster parents in and out. And we look at, a lot of what we look at is, where did this child come from? We talked a little bit about home communities. Unfortunately, right now, because we have so few resource homes, 70% of our kiddos are placed outside of their home community, and that's a huge loss for them. You know, their friends, their neighbors. Yeah.
Does that mean a child from Atascadero may end up in the Pomo, or that means a child from Atascadero may end up in San Jose?
Well, we're really talking within the county. Okay. So from, you know, but still, you're talking from Atascadero to Napomo, that's still quite a distance.
That's too far for
it's
a child.
Too far. Yeah. And so we look at, when we're selecting a home for these kids, we're looking at where did these kids come from, who's in their home community, who may attend, you know, a similar place of worship, or go to, you know, be into Little League, or whatever this child's particular activities are. We really try to look for a family match. And then it's a conversation, and I will kind of let Matt and Becca speak to what their experience is when they were being asked, you know, to foster their kids.
Yeah.
Can I ask another question?
Sure,
here?
Go ahead.
I guess I'm still kind of didn't quite get my question answered. I was kind of wondering, like, I know there's Family Care Network and you know, through the Department of Social Services. So if I was going to go out and look into being a foster parent, how would I choose which agency to go through to choose, you know, to, as far as deciding which agency to deal with for doing foster care?
Yeah, I think this is Becca, and I think I can answer that as the community-based organization. Some of it is looking at what you're looking for in an agency. So the county is, you know, a government organization, and they will do oversight. But there are other agencies, because they're working in that niche, like I talked to you about, that they will provide more oversight and support. And so it kind of depends on what you need. Like, if you feel like you need that extra hand kind of walking you through the process. Also, some agencies work within specific areas. So, for example, I'm thinking of Angels down in Santa Barbara County. They work to place infants. And Family Care Network specifically works to place kids with higher needs and kids that tend to be older. That's not the only children we work with, but that is our specialty. So if someone's looking to really foster teens, like, it might be a good idea to come through Family Care Network, because we specifically deal with those kind of kids. But really, it also comes down to, if you're looking for a faith-based organization, or if there's just a certain like goal that the agency has. And I think it's good for everyone to do their own research and look up their websites, talk to someone at the agency, see what their process is, see what their training schedule looks like, because everyone's going to be a little bit different.
Okay. And just to add on to that, kind of in that same realm, is every agency, every county has different requirements for their particular program. So I think it's, you know, important to kind of essentially like shop around. Everybody will also have a recruiter, so an individual that you can actually talk to that will give you very detailed information, and that can really spend some time with that individual or that family and get to know you, as well as, you know, give you their own advice. I talk to a lot of families on a daily basis, and sometimes I feel, you know, if they have a certain religious component in their life that's really important to them, that they would better be served going through a different agency, where there's other families, you know, they've been parents in the past and their kids are now in college and they want to do it again, and they're really competent, then great. You know, come through the county where, you know, you're going to be that advocate for the kiddo and you don't need additional people getting in your way. But yeah, it's shopping around. It's talking to anybody and everybody. I think a lot of people have friends or family that have been involved that can give you their own advice and their own experiences too.
I would like to add to that just really quick as well. We do orientations in prospective parents' homes. So we actually will send a recruiter out and we go through an orientation with the family and we walk them through some of the choices that they have. And so we try to come alongside them and help them choose. And if a family decides to choose another agency or decides to choose to go with the county, we're still completely supportive of that. We want everyone to be in the right fit for them.
Kevin, did that cover it?
Yeah, I think so. Okay, that just kind of wasn't sure on the different agencies what, you know, which one to go with. For instance, if you were looking for younger kids, is it better to go with social services than with Family Care Network, or does that make a difference?
So I think when we're talking about, like, age of kiddos, there's some agencies that, like Angels in Santa Barbara, that's very specific to kids that are five and under. But I think I would rephrase the question in looking at what type of support are you going to need from whatever agency it is. So the county agencies were a little bit more hands-off, where we're going to be there if you need us. If there's something very traumatic or emergency, we're going to step right in. But on a day-to-day basis, we're going to let you be that family with that kiddo. Where other agencies, like Family Care Network, they, you know, if there's specific, you know, mental health needs, they are going to be amazing at providing that additional layer of support. And that's where a lot of these agencies differ from the counties, whether it be that religious affinity that you have, they can bring that in as well. So, yeah.
Okay. Great. Yeah, no, I think that pretty much answers my question. I appreciate you letting me know that.
Great. And thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Okay. I want to expand on Kevin's question a little bit as you're answering it. It occurred to me that there is some kind of legal certification process or screening process for a foster child. Let's be candid. We need to make sure that there are not, can't think of a better word, predatory potential foster parents for predatory reasons that they want to be foster parents. So even if I were to work with Family Care Network to consider being a foster parent, there's still a legal process that the county is involved in to basically certify that home, or how does that process get worked out?
So each agency certifies their own home. So okay. The county has our process, the Family Care Network has theirs, and Santa Barbara has theirs. They're all very similar. They're all driven by state law. Mm-hmm. The foster family agencies has a few more rules in regards to the requirements for their families. So that is another, you know, small difference between, say, a county home and a foster family agency home. But there are state laws that require that we do background checks, that we do an analysis to make sure that the reasons you're coming into foster care are good reasons and that you understand what you're signing up for, because as we talked about earlier, it can be very difficult for parents who are taking these children in, and we want to make sure that our families are prepared for that before we certify them and let them fly on their own.
Yeah. So I would also assume then, and that if Family Care Network gets an inquiry from someone to be a foster parent, there are circumstances under which you, Family Care Network, may decide this potential parent needs a more regimented, for lack of a better word, environment to work with, and that you might refer that parent to county social services in either county.
Not exactly like that. Okay. We would definitely expect the same basic standards that the counties do. They have to pass a background check, and they're going to get their DMV record run and things like that that they're going to have to clear no matter what before any of us can work with them. And then what we're all really assessing is, do they have the family strengths and parenting strengths to handle our kids? Because the last thing we want to do is put kids into a home situation that is going to be stressed or can't meet that child's needs, and it's all going to fall apart. We don't want to do that to anybody. So it's not that we would look at a family and say, we don't want to work with you, go somewhere else. If someone is really a safety risk, then we're just not going to work with them, and we're going to let people know that. And if they, you know, if they have some needs, maybe we think that they're a very good potential family, but they have some needs, we may refer them for services and actually work with that family to develop them to become a really good foster family. But if we feel like they're a quality family, we leave that decision to go to the county or someone else, or to stay with us, up to them.
Okay, good to know. Thank you. I want to remind folks that we are looking at foster care in Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo County, and we have representatives from County Social Services in Santa Barbara County and from San Luis County, along with Family Care Network, with us on the program today. We still have some time if you'd like to. If you have any questions or concerns you'd like to find out about, the phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 805-781-3875 if you'd like to be part of the discussion. I was trying to formulate this question in such a way that it fit in my brain, and sometimes I just don't. The hard drive gets too full. Sorry. When a hypothetical situation, you have doesn't matter if it's a single parent or a married couple that gets arrested tonight for some crime at which they need to be incarcerated, and they need to be incarcerated immediately, and they have a 5- and 7-year-old child. They realize we're not talking about long-term care. We're just talking about what in the world happens to that child tonight to make sure that there's a safe, positive environment for them while you look for how you need to deal with foster care long-term with that. I apologize. There may be a better way to formulate the question, but it was such a distressing thing to think about. I'm not quite sure. There may be an easy answer, but in my mind as a layman, it seems like a very scary part of the problem.
So anytime children come into care, the first thing that we as the county look for is relatives. We want this child to be with someone who knows them, if at all possible, and if not a relative, a friend of the family, maybe their best friend's parents can take them in temporarily, and then we certify them. We still do the backgrounds and make sure that they're going to be safe and appropriate. If we can't find someone like that to take these children on an emergency basis, we do have foster homes that have already been certified and approved who are available to take them on a very short term while we're looking for more longer term opportunities for the child.
Okay. Same way in Santa Barbara County, Matt?
Yes, we operate in the same way.
Yeah. I suspect that the Family Care Network probably doesn't get those kinds of.
We contract with San Luis Obispo County right now to provide emergency shelter homes, and they are families that have set aside room and beds in their house to take kids on those emergency bases, and they will answer their phone in the middle of the night, and we have definitely placed kids at 3 a.m. in the morning when mom and dad went to jail, and so those situations do come up, and I think one of the crises that we are facing is we don't always have enough homes, and we have run into situations in San Luis Obispo County where we are putting kids in hotel rooms with our staff because there are not enough homes to house them. And so we have a great need for families to come in and be that temporary place, that safe place for those kids to land.
Okay. So in some cases, do you have foster households that only provide that kind of care?
Yeah.
I mean, my thought is, I'm over 65. My wife is over 60, and long term having a small child in our house is probably not what we're prepared for. But if you told us, gee, are there situations under which you would be considered taking this child in for a week or for 3 days or things like that? Until you answered that, it hadn't occurred to me that may be a particular type of foster family. And a particular type of maybe listener to this program that thinks, oh, gee, I don't know if I'm prepared to be a long-term foster parent, but, gee, if you need me for a week, we can talk about this. Are there a lot of parents you have that are in that kind of situation?
I think so. I think it really depends on each individual, you know, individual and family on what you're most comfortable with. We also see families that have been resource parents. They've adopted, but they're not willing to take in like a long-term placement, but they're willing to assist us, you know, over the weekend so that we can track down, you know, an aunt or an uncle and get them in a family home with people that they know. There's always an opportunity for any community member that's interested in being a resource parent, and we can always talk too about, you know, if you're not comfortable taking a child into your home, what are other things that you can do as well?
Yeah.
There's lots of opportunities for whatever kind of resource parenting you want to do. We have families who take our kids on a short-term basis. We have families who specialize in children age 0 to 5 who are prenatally exposed to drugs. We have families who specialize in teens who have particular mental health concerns. We have families who specialize in kids with autism. We need all families. And I think if I could really just talk about one point on this program, that would be my point. A lot of people don't realize who can be a foster parent. They might think, I can't, I'm not that kind of parent, I'm not good enough. But kids need parents who care. And so if you're somebody who just has a heart to serve our kids in whatever capacity, we would really encourage you to reach out, give us a call, and let's have a conversation with you and explain your options in all of the different ways that you can serve our kids.
You brought up a fascinating point. So you actually have short-term care parents who specifically have some knowledge or resources of working with someone like an autistic child. My God, can you just gold plate them? That's amazing to hear. We have a caller. Hold on a second. Alisa, this is you're on the air. Go ahead. Alisa from San Luis Obispo.
Hi, thanks for having me. I did have a question. Knowing that being with family is always the priority for the agencies and social services, currently what is the kind of realistic percentage of kiddos that do get the opportunity to go back with their families versus ending up in permanency and being adopted?
Sure. So I can answer that. Right now, our statistics, if you look at an entry cohort, so for all of the kids who came into care from July 1, 2016 to June 30th, 2017, 12 months from their exit, they exited to about 51% were still in care after a year, 40% reunified with their families, 5% went to guardianship, 4% were adopted. So it's almost 40%, and that's just for one particular cohort. But I think on average, you know, that's pretty close.
Yeah. Thanks for the question. Anything else, Alisa?
No, actually, that was just kind of what I was wondering. I appreciate that.
Okay, great. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
Yeah. I would like to say that I'm really happy to be working in this area of the country too, because I think we put a lot of effort into reunifying with families, and I can't say that's the case nationwide. I think the movement is heading that direction, but I think in our area on the coast, we've been more progressive with that, and I have seen a significant difference between our area of the country and other areas. And in the end, that really does support our families in the community, because we're trying to rebuild them and build them back up instead of just removing kids and removing kids. At the same time, we still need foster parents, because the more foster parents we have, the better matching we can do for our kids. So there's never a point when we've reached our goal. Like, the more foster parents we have, the better, because we have so many more options and we can just match our kids better.
Yeah, my hunch is that you don't have parents that are part of that resource pool of people who will take a last-minute emergency, who call you and say, gee, there haven't been any emergencies for 2 months. I feel lonesome.
We do. We do.
My first thought would be also, gee, it's wonderful that there aren't children who need that immediate need, but that's obviously not the real situation all the time. But that's an area I had not thought of. The other thing that is in my mind, because I'm aware of some situations where it's taken place, and that is, are there a lot of foster parents that go on, if the child that they are a foster parent for, or children in a number of cases, they're a foster parent for, is available for adoption because the birth family is not able to even be considered for a replacement? Are there a lot of foster parents that do a direct adoption of the child that's in their household? And are there some boundaries about being allowed to do that, I guess?
So I think probably the majority of parents who come to us to be resource parents come because they want to adopt. That's often what we hear, is either they're unable to have children of their own, or they have children and they're just really wanting to reach out to another child, but they're really adoption focused. And so one of the things we have to have that conversation with up front is about reunification, and that it's likely that they're going to foster 2, 3, 4 or more children before a child lands with them who's really going to be able to be adopted. adopted by this particular family. And for us, it would always be ideal if a family has been fostering a child for some time, if that child's not able to go home to their family of origin and they need to be adopted, that they would stay with that family. That's our goal, is to move children the least amount of times. Every time you disrupt a child from a family, that causes just additional trauma to this child, and that's not something we want to do. So whatever we can do to encourage that bond is something we want to focus on.
And kind of to add on to that, the last part of your question was about, once that child is adopted, what does it look like as far as their potential relationship with their birth family? So when adoptions happen, they are what we call closed adoptions. So the parental rights are terminated and the new adoptive parents become the parents. So it's up to them how they would like to facilitate a relationship with the birth family. So I think it goes back to the benefit of getting to know that birth family throughout the, you know, first part of the process, and developing a relationship, developing the correct boundaries. And then once that adoption is finalized, hopefully you do have a relationship, and everybody, you know, as difficult as it is to go through that process, is understanding of, we're all working towards what's best for this child. And, you know, if it's safe and possible to have your kids have a relationship with their birth mother or birth father, or both of them, or their grandparents, as a parent, why would you not do that? That's so important for them. You know, but if it's a safety issue or things are happening, then as a parent, you step in and you say, this is not appropriate. If you can't adhere to these boundaries, then we're not going to facilitate these. But yeah, I think it's really important to develop the right boundaries and also look at what's best for the child.
Okay, so you currently don't have enough resources, and you may never have enough resources, but the goal is to have more resources than you need. Mm-hmm. But where I'm going with this is, I'm assuming that there are some circumstances under which you basically need a child to be outside of a environment where there's a possibility they could run into a birth parent. In other words, you may have a child who is removed from the home in, let's say, San Mateo, and the goal is that child cannot be placed in San Mateo because you're afraid of a predatory parent, a parent that needs to have a restraining order against them for some other reason, and you don't want that child too nearby. In the case of San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara County, I realize you probably don't have a lot of placement places for children under those circumstances from out of the area, but you also have a situation where you may need that in reverse. How does that get addressed? And is there a networking situation between other agencies throughout the state on ways to address that when it comes up? Because my hunch is, if it comes up, you don't have a whole lot of latitude if you have a dangerous situation that needs that child as far away from birth parents as possible.
Well, I'll speak to that one. First of all, if our kids have to go into emergency shelter care, that is protective custody. And so they do try to make that placement confidential, and that just gives the court time to vet everything out. And you can speak to that too, Linda, just to make sure that they're in a safe place and determine the next steps. And so they do make that a confidential placement, so the child is safe during that period of time. As long as I've been working in the system, I would say that having very dangerous birth parents that are out to get a child or the family is pretty rare. If the county were to know that that's a scenario, they would definitely let the foster parents be aware of that. They would let them know of the safety risks ahead of time. And I would say that most of our kids need to stay in their home community regardless of if birth family is there. And we do a lot of work with our families on preparing them. What happens when you meet grandma in the community? What happens when you run into a sibling at the grocery store? Because those things do happen. And being able to normalize it without fear is probably the best approach. So there's only going to be a small percentage of birth family members that are going to be truly dangerous for our kids, where we need to make sure that they're away from them. And so occasionally I would say kids can be intentionally placed out of their home community, but I wouldn't say that's the norm.
Well, that's good to hear, because it was just it was a fear that I had thought may come up more often. We see drug addiction and drug related issues to become such a major factor in our society on a daily basis, and it's not going away. Mm-hmm. So we addressed the fact reasonably early that it's that all your agencies will go out and meet with a potential foster parent, sit down and do a Q&A with them. But I'm sure that one of the factors that comes to mind for people is how involved in this process, how long does it take? Does the FBI and the Spanish Inquisition show up in my living room five times and examine the fact that there's too much sugared soda in my pantry, and therefore they're not going to let a foster child get placed here? I mean, what? Because I think that's an apprehension that a lot of potential parents have. They may get a lot of those apprehensions addressed because they may know a foster family that they've been the Inquisition on. Okay, tell us all about this process and what you went through. How involved is it? And for some of these potential parents, my observation would be it might be very scary.
Sure. So I can talk in general about the process here in San Luis Obispo County, and then I'll let Matt talk about Santa Barbara County. Right now, it takes us about 90 days from the time you engage with us and decide to embark on this journey for us to get you certified. And the basic needs for that, you have to go to pre-service training. That's 5 sessions. We do provide food and child care. We try to make it welcoming. All of our families really have gotten a lot out of our pre-service training. They learned a lot about how to work with the foster system, how to work with birth parents, what does happen when you meet grandma at the grocery store, and so those kinds of foundational. There's a home and grounds. We're not looking for the sugar in your pantry.
You'll find too much sugar in my pantry.
Yeah, we're looking at safety concerns. Do you have a pool and you're looking to have us place a 2-year-old with you? Of course, we're going to have to talk about, how do we keep that pool safe? Do you have appropriate baby proofing in your home if that's required for the age of children that you're looking to really take care of? We look at your backgrounds, and all of that takes about 90 days. We have social workers who you work very closely with. A lot of our families develop close relationships with their home approval social workers throughout the process, but we really try to be as friendly and family-focused as we can be.
Yeah, absolutely. I would just reiterate what Linda was saying is, it's a 90-day timeline is what's mandated by the state, so we try and help you through that process most effectively within that 90 days. That's going to include what we call pre-service training, everything with certifying your home to make sure it's safe for any child or children that you're looking at taking in. Essentially, the process that you go through, it may sound a lot scarier than it really is, but essentially it's very basic stuff that we're looking for. I think most of us would agree that we would like to see every family that's going to ever have a child go through a lot of this, so that you just know, if you have knives in a drawer, you have a safety lock on it so that your kids can't just open up that drawer. If you have a pool, that you have a safety gate, hopefully common sense things is what we're looking to make sure that people are doing, so that when we place a kiddo with them, that we know that that kid is going to be in a safe, loving home.
Yeah. Thank you. Good way to kind of wrap it up here now, because we're getting down to the last few minutes, and I apologize for maybe cutting you short. As most of my listeners know, and the guests know, that we try and give you a few minutes to talk and wrap things up. Becca, why don't I start with you? Tell us, what did we miss that you want to make sure people come away from the table with today?
Sure. There's so much.
You only have about a minute and a half.
Sure. One of the things I wanted to say just about the approval process is it has shifted over the years, where I think before someone had to be a foster parent, and then if they wanted to adopt, they had to go through the process all over again. It is now one process. So when we're assessing families to be foster parents, we're assessing that they could be good guardian or adoptive parents as well. So there's no extra hoops to jump through. And it's also that layer of standard where if you're, equipped to be an adoptive parent, then you should also be a good foster parent, vice versa. So that is something else that I want to point out, that it's just across the board. And then also for us at our agency, when we were talking about just extra support and handholding and just a higher level of training, we actually train our parents to what's called an intensive services level. So we do a lot more training at our agency. But if people want to learn more about trauma-informed parenting and therapeutic foster care, we would be the agency they'd be interested in. And they would just know that the process is going to take a little bit longer and there's going to be a bigger training commitment. But then they come away feeling a little more prepared for some of the higher needs kids.
Great. Thank you. Matt, you're next.
Okay. I think my takeaway would be, yes, we're looking for resource family homes, but if you're that person that isn't willing to take that next step and saying, hey, I'm willing to open up my home to have a child or children come in and live with us, there's other opportunities out there where you can volunteer, you can become a mentor. There's what we call CASAs, which is court-appointed special advocates. So there's a lot that we all as community members can do to step up and actually support all the children that both Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo County are caring for.
Good. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Linda, you get the last word.
Okay. So I think the one thing that I would just like to really touch on is that we're talking about 369 children in San Luis Obispo County. These aren't mythical children who, you know, you may never see. These are kids who go to school with our kids. These are kids who have hopes and have dreams and really just want to grow up in a healthy and safe family. And we're just looking for families. You don't have to be perfect. In fact, I'd prefer if you weren't.
Because
caregivers can be anybody, individuals, couples, families with children, without, single income, dual income, working, retired, whoever you are. If you have room in your home and room in your heart for one of our kids, please come and talk to us, because we'd really love to have a conversation with you and let you know how you can really be of service to your community.
Wow. And you know, we forgot to mention that I believe November is Foster Family Month. And the County of San Luis Obispo is doing a proclamation on, I believe, the 20th of November. I'm sorry we missed mentioning that, but it's not the 20th of November yet. But that's one reason why we brought the program here, too. Want to remind you folks that I will not be with you. Hold on a second. Oh, good point. Thank you. You could have just jumped in the conversation. I want to remind you, what is everybody's website real quick? Sorry about that. So Santa Barbara County website.
Yeah, so Santa Barbara County, our website is ourcountyourkids.org.
Okay. Family Care Network?
It's really simple, fcni.org.
Okay. Family Care Network, Inc., okay, mm-hmm. In County of San Luis Obispo?
We're slofostercare.com.
Okay, good. Thank you very much. I'm sorry I forgot that. I usually just remind people that if nothing else works, Google does great things to find who you want. Okay, this is Central Coast Voices. Thank you for reminding me of that. Next week, Chris Kington Barker will be with you. She's going to speak with guests from the Adventure Club of SLO, which is an innovative, dynamic, and outdoor-centered organization that helps people who are transforming their lives. They're basically focused on special needs people and their ability to get out and do things. They deal with autism, head injury, and other challenges, and what they can do to make the daily life for those people very, very important. Central Coast Voices, as I've told you before, is a project of Action for Healthy Communities, which is a project of County of San Luis Obispo's Community Foundation, along with KCBX. I want to thank my guests today, Linda Belch, Matt Pennon, and Becca Alexander, for being with us. It's been a wonderful topic to talk about. I wish we could say that there was not any need, that you had a waiting line of parents to do this, but that's not the case. But we want to make sure that there becomes more parents involved in this on a daily basis. Thank you for what you've shared with us. This has been Central Coast Voices.